Well, parents of the province's 60,000 or so school-aged children have been waiting for clarity, basically, on what education is going to look like in September. Yesterday, the province outlined three different scenarios, with the most desirable one being a return to in-class teaching if COVID-19 numbers remain low. Jillian Pearson is a community advocate and a member of the Gender and Politics Research Lab at MUN. You also have another title. You're part of the Coalition for Affordable Childcare. Is that right?
That is correct.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Pearson, for joining us live. We've spoken to a couple of different figureheads on this, and reaction from you, I believe, is important. So what do you think about the back-to-school announcement that came yesterday?
I mean, initially, I was definitely relieved that, first and foremost, they are going to try and do their best to ensure that schools return to full capacity and as normal as possible. So I was really glad that they took that approach. I know a lot of people were nervous that they might have tried a mixed model first. So understanding that this plan, it has to be broad and it does have to be fluid. There's definitely some gaps, and there's a lot of vague information in some of the other options.
Do you think the plan is clear and detailed enough for parents to start making decisions?
I think once you read through all of the plan, a lot of parts of it actually more so act as directives for the local school district. So now a lot of parents are saying, well, okay, so we have this framework laid out, and sure, there's a lot on the table. But essentially what it's saying is that, hey, you have to wait for the plan from your district for more details. And I know a regional approach is important in terms of disease transmission, and that makes sense that different districts and schools would be able to make those decisions, you know, if the disease isn't in high numbers in their area. But then you have this kind of disjointed coordination where some districts and some schools might fare better than others. So that's super concerning.
What, wrong button, sorry. One of the scenarios that we did see was the school population split into alternating schedules. How difficult do you think that would be for working parents and even for students?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, in option two, they are taking the approach that, you know, for kids for K to six, they want to try and keep those in school as much as possible. But then they are alluding that there might be this plan for rotation. And then there's no coordinated mention of, you know, childcare for those kids who might be only accessing school a couple of days a week. You know, as we've seen, you know, it was a completely unsustainable situation there for a couple of months when a lot of families were forced to work from home, but they didn't have access to childcare. So, you know, there's some directives in there. There's some broad ideas, but there's no specific details to say, okay, if we do go in option two, here is specifically what is going to happen. And I think that, you know, that causes a lot of anxieties, you know, among parents and kids, because it's really hard to plan.
And another scenario would see a return to online classes. What are the challenges that poses for families where both parents, you know, they need to go to work, or maybe they're students themselves?
Yeah, and again, we're seeing, you know, that section is super vague. It doesn't address a lot of the issues that families faced at the beginning of this pandemic. There is no coordinated effort there about what will happen if children are transitioned fully to online. It does say that, you know, for K to three, they're going to aim for 5 hours a week, and 4 to 6, you know, 6 to 8 hours a week. You know, what time of day is that happening? That really can't happen without close supervision from parents. I know they're talking about getting technology to children, and that's all well and good, but, you know, how is that going to be implemented in real time? And is there any mechanism in place where teachers and administrators can monitor the participation rate, mental health for these children? There's a lot of questions, and again, I know that there has to be a broad starting point, but in some ways, this plan you know, is leaving people with more questions.
What are some of the main concerns that you're hearing? Like, what are the hurdles that parents are facing?
Well, some parents are saying, you know, on one hand, I'm really happy that there is a plan to ensure that the scenario they want is to have most kids back in school. Then there's some parents who they are high risk or their families are high risk, and it seems like there may be no plan in place thus far for families who feel like they should or need to homeschool. It seems like there's a lot of details around the disease transmission. So they have, cohorting of students. They have assigned seating. They have directives to schools to, you know, use a certain cleaner. But there's no specifics there in terms of how strong are they going to enforce the, you can't show up to school if you have a runny nose or a cough. That's a big problem for kids all throughout the year. So, you know, how are we realistically going to enforce that? There's all kinds of notes in there repeatedly that schools have to have proper mental health supports in place. But what do they mean by that? Do they mean, you know, are there going to be brochures available, or are they going to put in additional funding for counselors to meet with all the children, to have evaluations? Or is there any appetite to evaluate how these closures impacted children and how to mitigate, the impacts that they've already experienced? So,
yeah, it's definitely been a trying time for the young people. What do you think, and maybe you can't really answer this, but I will try to put you on the spot a little bit. What do you think the best case scenario is from knowing what you know and your perspective?
All around, I'm really glad they consulted the report that the Toronto Sick Kids Hospital put in place. And the main tenet from that was that we really do have to weigh the impact on kids in terms of social and physical, emotional well-being with the disease transmission. Because, you know, the actual disease is only one part of this public health management. And, you know, based on the epidemiology and research, it shows that kids in the long run and in the short term, they will do best in this situation if they're in school and they're engaged. And so having like a tight plan in place to keep that option as much as possible. The only thing is that if we are forced to a situation where we have to go to option two and option three, you know, how quickly can we do that? And how engaged are teachers on this? You know, as we've seen, NLTA came out and said that they were involved in some of the collaboration and consultation. I had maybe a dozen teacher friends write me yesterday and say, you know, one of their exact words were, parents find out more about my job than I do. You know, they find out on VOCM before I do, and that's embarrassing. And teachers wrote me and said, you know, they weren't given any consultation whatsoever, and they're the ones on the front line. So if we're going to have a tight transition plan, if we have to go into these worst-case scenarios, have to be the ones.
Do you think that yesterday's announcement ultimately clears up the uncertainty, or does it leave more questions for parents as we move towards September?
I mean, on one hand, I do appreciate that, you know, their focus was on option one right now. But I think a lot of parents are very worried that they're going to be in a situation where there's last-minute communication coming from the schools and the districts, and that if we have to go into option two or option three, that that's going to happen quickly, and we're going to be in the same position this spring where there's not going to be any, coordination or any solid plan.